Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 517 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. My guest co-host this week, once again, Chad Smart. And Chad, we were talking before we started recording. I was kind of, up in the air for a topic this week. So we are going to be talking AEW 5 years later, the growth of the company, kind of where it has gone, where it is now, and coming really off the heels of Wrestle Dream, the big pay-per-view that went on last night, or as we're recording this last night. What are your initial thoughts? I saw the results. I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the things that happened and, mm-hmm. and kind of speculate the future of AEW as well. So talk to me a little bit about your initial thoughts of the pay-per-view.
I mean, overall, I thought it was a good show. AEW usually does well with their pay-per-views. The ending, it's a little... I think the best way that I've seen it described is it's AEW's Empire Strikes Back. It left, you know, normally you want to leave the crowd on a high note. You want to, you know, and this one kind of a deflating ending or deflating, I should say, not deflating, deflating. And I'll be curious to see where they go from here and what's next. And, you know, I was a little disappointed with Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson losing the title to Jon Moxley. Danielson really hadn't had the title that long, which I don't think you really need to have a title that long, you know. But Moxley's already been a four-time champion. I can see the storyline being where, he, you know, losing to him and then having someone come and defeat Moxley, the big bad guy, will be probably do better than having someone beat a injured towards the end of his career, Bryan Danielson. So, we'll just have to wait and see how it goes.
Mox
see if they can follow up.
He hasn't been AEW heavyweight champion four times, has he?
I believe so.
Oh wow, I didn't.
Three or four. This may be the fourth, but
I didn't realize he had held it multiple times.
Okay. Yeah,
I knew he had held it.
Yeah, because they. Yeah, when it got held up due to
Punk.
And it's trying to. Yeah, I'm trying to make a sarcastic comment without actually saying CM Punk, but. When Punk was out, injured, and suspended, I think Mox got the titles.
So
as an interim,
how did it all end? You said you didn't like how it ended, leaving things deflated. How did it actually, like, did they beat down Bryan?
Yeah, Moxley won, had Bryan in a chokehold, and then the referee stopped the match. Which again. This is what I read earlier, someone's comment, that instead of doing the three arms lift and let it drop, the referee just called the match. And so that was a little, I think it would have been better if they would have had Danielson pass out instead of just having the ref call the match.
Yeah.
It would have looked better. Yeah. And then after that, the BCC came in, Claudio, your buddy Pac, who's a real bastard. And Marina Shafir, and they were beating Bryan down, and then Wheeler Yuta and Darby Allin came in to make the save. Wheeler Yuta is part of the six-man tags with Claudio and Pac, and he, you know, has not been too fond of them since they turned at the last show. And he ended up taking Darby out, and then they gave him the plastic bag. They gave Wheeler the plastic bag to put over Bryan's head. And so he started suffocating Brian, and then the locker room emptied and chased off the BCC, and then they stretchered Brian out.
So do you think they're setting up for Darby Allin to finally win the heavyweight championship?
I would think so. I would think either him or Orange Cassidy, because they did a segment earlier in the show where Jerry Lynn was talking to Orange and said, you know, you got to step up, you got to be the man, and basically stop being a, you know, slacker. So I mean, and I think, you know, AEW's got the young talent there to really build for the next 5-10 years. But again, it all comes down to how do you use them, and if you can keep people with a sustained push, or if they disappear off TV for months at a time.
Now, there had been speculation, obviously, that Shane McMahon, I guess there's pictures, so it's not just speculation, but there is a picture of Shane McMahon and Tony Khan together. There's a picture of Shane McMahon and the Bucks together, which the Young Bucks are still EVPs, executive vice presidents of the company. There was speculation. This is where the speculation part comes in, I guess. A couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, or maybe longer, I don't know, Mox did an interview in the ring with Tony Schiavone and was acting kind of erratic, which is, you know, obviously within his character, but I think people were kind of speculating then that maybe this was going to be the way to introduce Shane McMahon into the fold. First question, do you think Shane McMahon will be an on-air personality with AEW, and B, does the world need that in 2024/2025?
Yeah, your first question, possibly. I don't know. Obviously, the Young Bucks and Tony Khan don't return my calls or DMs, so they don't. I don't know what's going on. Your second question, no, we don't. I think it would be a mistake to bring him in as, I mean, I guess, you know, do you call it a higher power type character or an invasion type storyline? And granted, the NWO was 25 years ago. The higher power was almost 25 years, somewhere around there. So, in that terms, yeah, it's, you know, it's fair game to redo those type of angles, but I don't know. I guess maybe as a fan that's been watching for that long, it still seems fresh. And, you know, we've discussed it before how the Attitude Era seemed like, you know, just a few years ago, whereas when we started watching, if you would have brought in Luthez and Danny Hodge, it would have been, those guys are way older than in the time frame that I'm talking about, but you know what I'm getting at, right? It's like, if you would have brought in, I mean, even when, you know, superstar Billy Graham and Bob Backlund came back, it was like, wow, these guys are old, you know, but they were actually more closer to that time period than the Attitude Era is now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, I guess more specifically, my question, Shane McMahon specific, not necessarily the higher power or the outsider or invader or invasion angle, but Shane McMahon, is it more of a, you know, an FU to WWE that we've got the founder's son in our company now, and you know, his brother-in-law is running the show on WWE, and he's here with us now? That's kind of where I was going, not necessarily the angle wise.
No, and that's what it's good. I don't think it is good. And this is just my opinion. I have not watched the Mr. McMahon documentary. I believe you have, if you watched all of it. From what I've read, it seems like Vince and Shane really didn't have a good working relationship, and that's why Shane left WWE the first time around. So to bring him in, it's, you know, it would be one thing if he was an on-air personality in WWE or had more influence in WWE right now. But, you know, the last time we saw him was at WrestleMania 39, where he injured himself. And before that, I think the last time I remember him was when he won the Best in the World tournament.
Well, he also popped up at the Royal Rumble, I think, that year.
And that too, yeah, which, you know, soured people on who know the backstage going ons and rumors. So I don't think Shane adds, you know, I think Tony, with this new deal with Warner Brothers, I think Tony Khan is good enough in his negotiations for the company that I don't think you need Shane in that regard. And I don't think Shane McMahon needs to be an on-air presence. I think he would just distract from a lot of you guys. And this is this is probably the silly part, but Shane McMahon is probably bigger than a lot of the guys in AEW. And so when you have someone, you know, when you have the manager or the authority figure who looks like they could legitimately beat up your talent, not a good look.
So you meant like physically bigger, not just yes. in name bigger. I got you. Yeah. I got you. Well, let's talk about AEW. You know, it was 5 years ago that it became officially AEW. They just celebrated on Dynamite a couple of weeks ago. Mm. The build up to it, though, of course, was Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks. And I was it Kenny Omega was involved in that where they did the show in Chicago yeah. And sold out pretty quick. It was all in, right? It was like a 10,000 seat venue there in Chicago. And it really kind of sparked a lot of interest. And I think people were wanting something new. They were wanting something different. WWE, I guess, how far back was that when they did that? Was that like 6 years ago then? Or how long did it take from that instance to get to AEW where it landed on TV?
I believe All In was in early 2019. Let me check. And then
they were on TV.
Oh, it was 2018.
Okay.
The first one was in September of 2018, and then a year later is when.
Okay, that's I thought it was about that time frame. Yeah. I remember Greg Holtke, who is a friend of the show, went to that first one and sent pictures and was very excited about it. I think he actually may have done a Twitter takeover for the My123Cents account and was tweeting from all of that. And I think that's kind of where StarCast and Conrad and his branding and all that kind of came into play too. So initial thoughts, you know, what were you thinking when this was going on? Because we had TNA, which was still kind of floundering. I think it was Impact Wrestling still. WWE obviously had the stranglehold and was not, I think, maybe in a creative rut. And I think, obviously, men and women in wrestling needed a place, a venue, an outlet to do their craft if they weren't going to be in WWE and if they didn't want to be a part of TNA really, maybe at that time, I think Lucha Underground may have been already done by then. So there was not a whole lot of other options. So what were your initial thoughts hearing about this?
Yeah. And I mean, you had Ring of Honor going at the same time. And I think this was probably around the height of the Bullet Club popularity. Again, I don't watch New Japan, so I'm not that familiar with what was going on. And I wasn't watching Ring of Honor at that time either. But yeah, it obviously the hype was there. If you can take indie guys and sell out a 10,000 seat arena with no TV show, no matches announced, you know. I thought when AEW was founded that it was a good thing because, as we've discussed many times here on the show, I watch WWE, but I'm not a huge WWE fan. Something about the product doesn't appeal to me the way that WCW did, the way ECW did. And so as a fan, it was good to have something different to come along. And, you know, I think when AEW started, when they announced, they had like the little press conference event where they announced Jericho and Pac and all the names that were going to be there. It was, I think, bigger than, you know, when Jeff Jarrett announced TNA founding. And that could just be that, you know, the difference in the social media aspect of things or the online community, how it changed in, you know, in the near 20 years. But, you know, I think it was good to have a company that was coming out and trying to be different than WWE out of the gate instead of trying to be WWE light, which is what TNA was for so many years. And I think it was good. I never would have expected it to be as big as it is within 5 years. You know, the fact that they got on TNT or TBS to start when, you know, history has showed us that probably the reason WCW is not around right now is because the higher powers in the company didn't want wrestling on TNT or TBS, you know, back in 2001. So the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Well, you said something interesting, and I'm not, I do kind of want to have a healthy debate here, but you had said that, you know, when they announced it, they had Jericho and Pac, and you named someone else, but they were all former WWE guys. And you said that it was important for them to not be WWE light. My perception was they were coming off as WWE light. They were taking a lot of the guys who had, and women who had been released or were no longer with the company. I do think that they did a better job of building up other, you know, homegrown talents, if you will, like Orange Cassidy, like Darby Allin, you know, but, you know, Moxley and Jericho, Pac, Jim Ross, Cody Rhodes, which Cody obviously being a founder of it, but I think that they have still, 5 years later, they continue to struggle with that mentality. Because obviously you need to have a balance of bringing in talent that people are going to recognize and know, and that they're going to stop and watch your show when they're flipping through the channels, but also trying to build that, you know, that talent internally and creating those big stars. And so it, it does become a delicate balance, or a, you know, a balancing act where, you know, who do we push? Who do we not push? And then bringing in, and then I think one of their, you know, things in the last couple of years is their roster has become so bloated that it's like, how do you find time for everyone to have a spot and to be a part of this and grow and develop? Because without house shows, which, you know, they've tried and not had much success with, and I don't think they're running any house shows now, you know, how does the talent get the reps? Back when we were watching in the 80s, those guys were on the road, you know, 250, 300 days a year. So I think that may be one of their detriments, but I do think that it's overall a good thing to have that alternative. Like you said, it's it's something different than WWE to watch.
Yeah, well, to your point, and I agree with you that I think one of their missteps that they have taken over the 5 years is signing the majority of WWE releases. And just because somebody gets released doesn't mean you need to bring them in unless you have a planned out, you know, path for them, storyline. But when you're starting out, I think having Jericho, having Pac, even though Pac wasn't like a major player in WWE, you know, he was the Cruiserweight champion, but history has showed that that title means less than the 24/7 title in terms of things. But when you're starting a company, like you said, you need established guys, one, to get the audience's attention. You know, you have to have names that people are going to draw people in. You know, it's why indie wrestling companies book, you know, past their prime legends. It's to get people there. And two, it's also, you know, I'll use the Rocky Five analogy, which still the greatest Rocky movie ever. I don't care what anybody says. Rocky Five is the best.
You're losing your argument on AEW with that statement alone. So,
hey, we'll go back, watch all five in a row. Tell me I'm wrong. But in Rocky Five, Rocky has retired. Tommy Morrison wins is basically handed the title. And, you know, the perception is you're a paper champion. You haven't beat anybody. So if you start a company and, you know, and that's why I think having Jericho be the first AEW champion was the right call, because then when Hangman Page beat him, he beat an established person. Whereas if he had just come in and, you know, even if it had been Omega and Hangman the start, to the people that watch New Japan, yeah, those are big stars. But to the American audience, those guys aren't really names yet. So in that regard. So yeah, I mean, that's where I think having, again, the stars to start off your company is good. But yes, now coming in and, you know, we now have MVP and Shelton Benjamin just showed up in WWE. There's rumors Bobby Lashley's coming in. AEW, yeah. There's rumors Bobby Lashley will be showing up. You know, and I think, again, if you have a story in place for them, that's fine. But if you're just bringing them in to be like, oh, look, this guy got released and now we have him here, then you suffer from tinnitus, which is, you know, you're sacrificing your company and your homegrown talent to the, you know, the flavor of the month. So,
you know, and I think that that's a great point too, is, you know, those guys that came in originally, you know, like Orange Cassidy, like Darby Allin, I think Dr. Britt Baker, there were some of the others on the women's roster as well. I think that sometimes they do kind of get pushed to the side as the new flavor of the month comes in for WWE or from WWE, or, you know, I think that, but again, I like the fact that there is an alternative, because you said, you know, just because someone's released doesn't mean that they have to be picked up, but it is nice that if there are, you know, changes going on at WWE, at TNA, back when Ring of Honor was a separate entity, you know, that there was an alternative, that the men and women had a place to go. Not only the on-air talents, but people behind the scenes that mm-hmm. could go places and still be in the business and make money and you know, improve upon their craft. And so in that regard, I think AEW and the fact that they are going there and they are making a lot of money, because, and this is not meant to sound like an insult, I know that it is used a lot of times as an insult, but Tony Khan is the money man, you know. Mm-hmm. I know that the phrase money market's thrown around a lot, but I think it's great that there is someone that can offer, you know, a comparable wage, maybe in some cases even more so than what the talents in WWE are making. I think that, you know, if they're able to do that and take advantage of that situation, you know, more power to them. It beats toiling in a 130 seat arena in a, you know, bingo hall somewhere, getting paid $25 and, you know, a hot dog and a handshake, as they used to say. So I think in that regard, you know, Tony Khan gets a lot of criticism, and admittedly, I have spewed out some of that criticism, but on this side of it, I think it's great that he is able to provide talents with an opportunity and with some cash flow. But again, I would like to see them grow and expand and get to the point where they're on the road again and touring and giving them opportunities to improve and get better, because there are mistakes made everywhere. But I got to bring it up. Last night, or, you know, at the Wrestle Dream show, I don't even know who they were. Two women were wrestling and the one woman's shoulders weren't down, and the referee pushed her shoulders down, like right on, like, and that's partly, I think, production, because that could have probably been covered up if they would have had a different camera angle ready. Yeah. But then again, you know, they're learning, they're growing, they're developing. It's 5 years, but I mean, you look at 5 years of WCW, if you go from when WCW officially became WCW in 1989, by 1994, you know, they're launching into, or getting, you know, by 95, they're launching into Nitro and overtaking WWE within 2 years of that. So I don't see that happening with AEW, but I don't think it has to happen. I think that as long as we're providing entertainment and something else, an alternative to WWE, I don't think there has to be a number one and number two, like, clearly defined companies. At least that's my opinion.
A lot of things to touch on. So yes, Tony Khan does pay, and there have been reports that he's overpaying. But as long as he learned from Eric Bischoff not to give guaranteed deals, so that people can, you know, break a fingernail and then sit home for 6 months collecting a paycheck because they don't want to wrestle. Again, it's not my money. I don't care how much he pays people.
Right.
You know. For WCW in the 5 year comment, yes, I mean, WCW was founded in 89, but they had the legacy of Jim Crockett Promotion that they were. It wasn't like a brand new startup company. It was coming in. You had people, you know, that were already established, or a company that was established. You just basically changed the name and brought in more money. But I do agree with you that AEW wrestlers do need more, especially the newer talent, the younger talent, needs more places to work. And I know a lot of them do indie shows on the weekend. Some of them go over to Japan for tours, which I think is a great working relationship between AEW and New Japan. But, you know, I mean, right now WWE is cutting back on house shows and their touring schedule. But they have the performance center where they can send wrestlers down to train during the week. AEW doesn't have something like that. So yeah. And that's, you know, that's kind of the catch 22 is you want to be this company and have a weekend show. Cause they had, you know, they were doing house shows limited right. at the time. And then Collision started because of whatever situation you want to believe led to that, whether it was planned or just a way to make people happy. And, but yeah, I think, I definitely think that these talents doing indie shows is, you know, and I don't know if Tony Khan pays for their indie appearance, which I would say maybe he should in a way. That way they can get them booked on more shows possibly. But yes, the referee pushing the shoulder down last night, I did kind of laugh at that myself. And again, I don't know if that was just, you know, the referee, I mean, he probably could have said something instead of putting the shoulder down or made it look like he was, I don't know if he could have made it look to check to see if the shoulder was down and somehow, you know, but yeah. But again, but you know, stuff happens. So
exactly. You know, and I'm not overly criticizing it. I just, you know, I noticed it cause I think there was something similar that happened at the previous pay-per-view as well. So with a shoulder or something with the referee, it was something with on the referee side. And again, not picking on referees by any means, because there's a lot that goes into being a good referee as well. So except for my favorite referee, but we'll leave her alone for this sake of this podcast. Did you think though, 5 years ago when things were going and obviously we had a pandemic that, you know, kind of screwed things up for a lot of walks of life. So I do think that, you know, there were lingering effects from that has kind of gone into this as well. But do you think that AEW is going to continue to grow and develop? And I know this new deal with Warner Brothers, it's Warner Brothers Discovery, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, getting the streaming on Max and doing some of that, I think it's certainly going to help build the profile and hopefully lead to bigger and better things for the company. Yeah. The one thing that I kind of find is I think the less Tony Khan says, the better, because I think sometimes he runs his mouth too much on social media. And I think that's where some of this tribalism amongst fans comes in too. I was the same way with Eric Bischoff when Eric Bischoff used to get on Nitro and give away Raw results. You know, it's those little things that I am a WWE guy and I will always be a WWE guy. But I'm also a wrestling guy and I do watch clips and things from AEW. We've watched the pay-per-view here before and you know, I've not been to a live show, but maybe one day that will happen too. But I want to see AEW succeed. I want TNA to succeed. Ring of Honor, you know, whatever incarnation or whatever they're going to try to do with that, you know, whether it ends up on TV again or not, I want wrestling to succeed.
Yeah. I mean, I think AEW will be around for the foreseeable future. Again, it's as long as Tony Khan is running the company, as long as Shad Khan is making billions. You know, I think about a quote from Citizen Kane when which I'm sure you have seen many a times being a journalism major. Were you a journalism major in college?
No, but major? I did see some.
Oh. Yeah. Anyway, they're one of Kane's financial advisors is talking to him about his paper, and he's like, you've lost $1 million this year on the paper, which, you know, when Citizen Kane was made in 1935, that was a lot of money back then. And he's like, yes, and I'll lose $1 million next year and the year after that. And in 60 years, I'll be broke. That's how I feel about AEW. You know, they can lose $1 million a year or 2 million and the cons have the money to back it up. So, you know, it's just like WWE in that regard, you know. Sure. I think where AEW really struggles and in the growth department is promotion. You know, I don't know how many times I've read online comments like, oh, they're doing a show here where I live, and I had no clue about it. You know, there was no, you know, someone, again, comments I've read in the past week, like they should have had more ads during the baseball games because TBS is showing the baseball playoffs, you know, should have been running more ads, ran ads for Wrestle Dream to promote it. I mean, there's a billboard here in LA for Full Gear from last year that's still up. And it's like, if you can promote a show for a whole year after it's done, you should be able to promote shows that are coming up as well. And I think that, and I don't know what their promotion department is, how many people it is, what their, you know, again, AEW's whole business structure, I don't know anything about, but it seems like marketing and promotion is their weakest point. And it's even like when you go to a show and there's like four t-shirts for the event you're at, and then like for two wrestlers, and that's it. And it's like, seriously, you have all these guys, you know, like, to me, you should have a shirt for every wrestler that's on the card. And, you know, I know Pro Wrestling Tees is like the official maker for AEW shirts and stuff. You would think that they would be able to do that easier. And I, again, don't know the business aspects of it. Don't know how long it takes to mass produce, you know, 1,000 shirts or whatever, but it just seems like the promotion department is very lacking.
Yeah. I would agree with you on that. And the other side of things I want to talk about is, you know, in those early days, there seemed to be so much discontent. And again, it's what you read online. And I've heard said more than once, this war, if you will, it's between the fans. It's not between, and I think in Tony Khan's head to an extent, but it's not between the talent, you know, the on-air talent. They're not warring with one another. But I found it interesting in those early days of AEW. You know, we had guys like Pac and Jericho and Moxley or Dean Ambrose at the time, who were unhappy in WWE, got their releases and went to and signed with AEW. Keith Lee and Edge and Christian, and you know, there's a laundry list a mile long of talent who have left, jumped ship. And in my head back at that time, you know, I'm like, how does WWE turn this around? There's not this opposite, you know, there's not talent jumping from AEW to WWE. And then we saw Cody Rhodes and Sean Spears and Jade Cargill. And there's been a handful of talent who have jumped as well. I think were it not for AEW, Cody Rhodes would not be the Universal Champion right now. So I do think having that opportunity to go away and, you know, get that fresh coat of paint and show the world and show, I guess, back at that time, the audience of one being Vince McMahon, that, yeah, I can get over with a crowd and I can do these things and come back. Mm. I never in a million years, I remember hearing somebody had asked, I think it was when Ric Flair was doing the podcast with Mark Madden. Somebody had asked them, who will be the first talent to jump from AEW to WWE? And they both said Cody Rhodes, which surprised the hell out of me. And then it happened not much later after that. So were you surprised to see Cody, who was an EVP and was a big part of, you know, I mean, he's part of that 10,000 seat show. Wasn't that him and Dustin's match where they bled? Probably still one of the best matches in AEW's history. As a part of that, were you surprised to see him go back to WWE after leaving the company under less than ideal terms?
Yes, in the regards of the fact that he was an EVP, that he was a founder of AEW, it seemed shocking. Like, you know, why would you just leave your creation to go back to a place that you weren't really respected before? And no, because I think that was always his goal, was to get back there. And, you know, his goal was to go out on the indies and make a name for himself. And, you know, we've talked about it, I think last year, over the WrestleMania episodes. To me, still don't understand why Cody is in the position that he is in WWE, because he left, he established himself, but to go right back into WWE and be placed right at the top of the card with very little, and I know he was injured, you know, and that took away 6 months or so out of the first year, but, and I, I, You know, I still have trouble with Cody, but I think that goes more in with WWE's presentation, where I think last time I was on the show, I talked about how you have the tribal chief storyline and then you have everything else. And even though Cody is champion right now, it's still, when's Roman coming back? When's The Rock showing up? When is, you know, he's holding the title, but I don't think he's the main focus really in the grand scheme of things. So I was surprised to see him go, but I think it worked better because even in when he was in AEW in those last 6-7 months, like the fans weren't really behind him anymore. There was, you know, now they talk about the Jericho verse or the, not the Jericho verse, the vortex of Jericho, I think it is, where anybody that gets sucked into it comes out worse than they were before. And it was like the Cody vortex before that, where, you know, he wasn't really feuding with anybody that was getting anything out of it. And he was, you know, because he had made the stipulation that when he lost the match, can't remember if it was against Jericho or Omega, where when he challenged for the title, he said, if I don't win, I'll never challenge for the title again. And it kind of hampered him. And I, you know, looking back now, did he do that because he knew as soon as his contract was up, he was going to be leaving and didn't want to be possibly stuck in a championship position? I don't know. That's pure speculation right now that I just made up.
You heard it here first. No, that makes sense.
But, you know, and into your regard of people that have jumped from AEW, I don't think there's been, you know, I'm trying to think, Sean Spears, not a major player. Ethan Page, not a major player. Jade Cargill, I think, looks not as good now as she did in AEW. And she, you know, she was undefeated in AEW until her last match, but she wasn't feuding with anybody of note, really. Anybody that, because they have the women's title and the TBS title, and the TBS title is more of the secondary title, I would say. And nobody that was gunning for the women's title at the time was going for the TBS title. And now in WWE, I think she just, and I don't know if it's just her personality, but I think she doesn't carry a lot of personality in WWE. And I mean, that's my opinion. I don't know how you feel about her there, but I think being in the tag team with Bianca is good for her because it does give more time in the ring, but I don't think it was an AEW major loss. That's what I'm saying. And I'm trying to think of who else has jumped over, but yeah, I don't think AEW has been hindered by the people that have left to go to WWE.
It did feel after Cody left that Tony, that one, pardon the pun, stung a little bit. But, you know, with Bianca, I think that they are, or I'm sorry, with Jade being with Bianca, I think that, yeah, you're right. This is giving her more time in the ring, and I think it is going to eventually set up to them splitting and mm-hmm. having a feud. I don't think she was necessarily ready for prime time when she was in AEW, and I think that they did a good job of making her kind of that Goldberg-type character where she was squashing through everybody and then, you know, losing her last match, losing the belt, and then kind of going away. Ethan Page, you know, I think coming into to NXT and winning the championship, I think it kind of shows you that not everybody is necessarily going to jump from AEW and go straight to WWE. They do need mm-hmm. that seasoning. And I think Jade Cargill, pardon the dogs. I'm ready to go out there.
Let them out.
Scream at them. Yeah.
Like, Kevin, let the dogs out.
So somebody has come over. I don't know who's here. They've got my dogs all round up. But anyway, I think that, again, the talent pool is so deep in WWE. Mm-hmm. The talent pool is deep in both companies, obviously. Yeah. I am curious to see if more talents come back. You know, I know when Mercedes Moné, for example, was on that edge, and people were, pardon the pun again with edge, but they were talking about her going to AEW, and she had even made a comment about, you know, looking forward to going back to WWE someday. Because I do think, even though AEW is on TV, they are international, you know, they travel to Canada and to England, and they've had big shows and whatnot. Mm. I do still think that WWE is the dream destination for a lot of the talent. Not everybody. I think that there are folks who are in AEW who are going to be happy staying in AEW. Maybe they don't want to travel the world. And I mean, you look at the grind that WWE does between, you know, doing a weekend pay-per-view in Germany and then they're back for Raw on mm-hmm. Monday night. You know, it's those kinds of things. And doing this trip to Saudi and
yeah,
you know, there's all kinds of things that factor into that. Yeah. And even though, yeah, they are cutting back their dates, their house shows next year, they're still going to do 200 or 250 shows. So, I mean, there's still a grind to that, but I think mm-hmm. that, you know, AEW obviously has the talent and there are men and women there who are making a difference and making a living. But I also wonder with Ring of Honor, you know, was it a mistake to buy Ring of Honor? Should Tony Khan have just let that, or should we have just let that, you know, go away like WCW did? I haven't seen any other than some of the nostalgia of like the Briscoes and mm-hmm. and keeping those guys in the universe. I don't really see why Ring of Honor still exists. In its current form, at least.
No, I agree with you. I think buying it was a good call just to have the rights to the library.
Right, yes.
And so that, you know, like when they did Danielson versus Nigel McGuinness recently on Dynamite, mm-hmm. you know, you have the footage to go back into and
right.
do a hype video for. But I agree with you. I don't think Ring of Honor in its current form is necessary. Other than, I mean, I guess it gives people places to, you know, wrestlers the chance to have a couple of extra matches a week. Mm-hmm. But I definitely think Ring of Honor should be separated from AEW. I don't think having people show up, you know, that are winning in Ring of Honor and then they show up and just lose in AEW doesn't help anybody. I think the titles definitely need to stay off of AEW television because there's enough titles already.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think that, I don't know, you know, AEW has three shows as well as does WWE, but really you only need to watch one AEW show. Like Dynamite is their main show. Rampage is the jacked metal Sunday Night Heat equivalent. And which I know they've been doing some storylines and they have people that just show up on that show, but there's nothing must see about it. And Collision is even the same way too, where it's like, when was the last time something major happened on Collision that, you know, needed to watch and see that you couldn't catch a replay of on Dynamite? And so I think, and I don't know, again, I'm going to say this a lot, I don't know the ins and outs. So I don't know how much booking Tony Khan does, how much other people are involved in helping out the formatting of the show. But yeah, hopefully in these next 5 years with Warner Brothers, they can figure out what their shows are. And you know, I don't think it needs to be necessarily a brand split like WWE has with SmackDown and Raw, but I think you need some consistency on who's on the shows. And you know, mentioned it before too, going back to the promotion thing, with the shows being what they are, you never know who's going to be on a show because they don't run the, you know, they don't build a feud from week to week to week necessarily and have the same people on. So when you see that AEW's coming to town, until the week before, you know, if you want to see Moxley or Orange Cassidy or, you know, are they going to be on the show or do you want to wait until they announce a card and then buy a ticket?
You know, I actually, as you were talking, something clicked in my brain. For those who are still listening or watching that were probably screaming at your listening device earlier, CM Punk.
What about him? Who?
We were talking about people who jumped from AEW to WWE, Phil? And we didn't mention CM Punk.
Yeah.
Or are you trying to be funny over there? Because when he was in AEW, he was the greatest thing. And now that he's in WWE, it's like, whatever. Okay.
No, I think Punk is fine. I think, you know, Punk is one of those, he's kind of like Cody in a sense. And I wonder, I mean, I think AEW was necessary to bring him back into wrestling.
Yeah.
But once he got there, and again, who knows what the backstage is actually like, you know, if he, you know, allegedly the new Chris Jericho personality, the learning tree, is a mockery of CM Punk going up and offering his advice to people without them asking for it. And him saying, you know, oh, I've, you know, been wrestling for 20 years. I know what I'm doing. But I think in the grand scheme of things, I think Punk needed to go back to WWE. I think it needed that closure, that kind of redemption storyline where, you know, and it's interesting given that Triple H is running the show now and what Punk has said about Triple H in the past. Yeah. But, you know, I think when he was injured the first time and he showed up at a WWE show in Chicago, you know, he was backstage talking. I think, again, here's my speculation, my conspiracy theories. I think he was planting the seeds to go back, to test the waters, to see like, hey, if I got out of AEW, would I be welcome back here? And, you know, he's also in his 40s now. Late 40s, you know, he's a different person, hopefully, than he was 10 years ago.
Sure.
And I don't think the AEW I'm just gonna say backstage, I don't think the AEW environment is where he needed to be. And then the fact that he couldn't go two matches in a row without getting injured. I mean, that
right. Yeah, and I think that comes with age too. You know, you get that maturity, but then you also learn, you know. I think we just saw AJ Styles got hurt again too, so
and I think, you know, being in NXT with all the young female talent, you can look into Punk's history with wrestling women. So
well,
that reminds me, I was going to start off the show, I heard this the other day, do you know what Jerry Lawler's favorite college is?
No.
Brigham Young.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, I was just saying, yeah, I think Punk, again, I don't think it was a major loss for AEW. I think in the immediate, it was a loss, but in the long term, I think it was probably a better situation. But I would say that, you know, it's something that probably brought light to the backstage element that Tony Khan needs to probably step up and be more of a boss than necessarily just a friend backstage.
I would argue that. I think that the continuous spiral of ratings and the lack of butts and seats in the arenas, I'm not saying it's all CM Punk, but I think that there was a large contingency of people who started tuning in or tuned in again or continued to tune in after Punk came back. And I mean, think his absence is being felt to this day.
Yeah, I can see that because I think, you know, and I think it's because, you know, the fact that after he being gone for almost 10 years, I guess 8 years by the time he came back. Well, he walked out in 2014, right? And he came back in 2021, 22 in AEW?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was
22. So in that 8 years, you know, the CM Punk chance never went away.
Right.
When they went to Chicago. So I think him coming back obviously brought people back into watching. And I guess this goes into what we were saying earlier in the show. It's like you need those established stars to draw in the audience of maybe lapsed fans. And I think Punk is that biggest star. I don't know who else you can bring in right now that would get the same reaction. And, you know, like, I mean, Jericho is there, big star, but he's been there since the beginning. And you know, a lot of fans say, like, it would be better if he went away for a few months a year. You brought in Adam Copeland. Unfortunately, he gets injured. He's out probably for, you know, until early next year.
Us 50-year-olds should be jumping off of the damn top of the
stage,
right?
I can't even, I mean, I get out of bed and injured. But so I think, you know, and I think in addition to Punk leaving, as mentioned before, I think promotion of the company and just bringing in every ex-WWE guy that they've brought in, like So I think there are many issues that are a factor right now in AEW's ratings status, but I would agree. I'll give you that CM Punk leaving probably hurt a lot more than would have expected.
Yeah, but and again, as we wrap things up, you know, I really do legitimately hope for the best that they get some more cohesion backstage. They get the right talents in place, because I think the on-air product, you know, the on-air talent is fine with what they have, but they need some of those more established, I think, folks, maybe some that were released after TKO, you know, and WWE merged that whole Endeavor stuff. You know, maybe they're able to pick up some people behind the scenes that can help guide and develop and work with Tony Khan. And he doesn't have to be a one-man show.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, you know, I would ask you, I hadn't thought the CM Punk angle. It's a good point. But I think the biggest detriment probably to AEW success is the removal of Vince McMahon from WWE and bringing in Triple H and having him take over, because the product has gotten better there. So what would you say to that? Do you think Vince is being out of, and yeah, you know, I rag on it because I'm not a fan, but the Tribal Chief storyline has got people involved, and for some reason 20,000 people will yeet when it comes out. But do you think WWE stepping up their game over the last 3 years?
I think it has been said before, and I think we may have even talked about it on the show, you know, when you have someone that you're competing with, whether you're technically, and I don't necessarily think that WWE is competing or AEW is competing with WWE, mm-hmm. there are another space out there. They're making the loudest noise in that pond, if you will. I think you're going to improve your game. And I think that Vince leaving, you know, and again, not a Vince McMahon apologist, not you know, condoning any of the allegations or anything like that. But this podcast wouldn't exist had it not been for, you know, his vision for wrestling in the 80s that hooked us both. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a reason I have a shelf full of wrestling action figures behind me still.
Because you're a pack rat. Yeah.
Well, I'm a pack rat, but, you know. So, but I also think that after 40 plus years in that position and, you know, kind of being that, I don't want to use the word dictator, but, you know, it was an audience of one for most of that time. And sure, they enjoyed a lot of success and billions of dollars, and he was able to sell that company and, you know, walk away with a big stack of cash. But I also think that it was necessary to bring in fresh ideas and different visions and new talent and different revenue streams and the things that Triple H and others around him have been able to do. And I don't, you know, I don't think that AEW necessarily made all that kind of thing happen, but I do think it brought an awareness and brought a legitimate, you know, company in there that got on TV, you know, excuse me, even though TNA was on Spike for a minute and did some things, but really, you know, going on to TBS and TNT and establishing themselves that way, I think it did make some ripples and it did certainly, I think, force WWE's hand to make some changes and make improvements and make things for the better. And I think, you know, it all helps. It helps all companies, MLW, Ring of Honor, New Japan, AEW, WWE. When one of them succeeds, I think it helps everybody succeed. It brings the profile up for professional wrestling, and it makes it not as much of a LOL. You know, when you see superstars show up at a football game or at a baseball game or at the Emmys or at the Democratic National Convention or the Republican National Convention, whatever pop culture outside of the wrestling sphere that we see them in, I think it adds legitimacy to the business and makes it less haha funny and more of, okay, this is a serious thing.
Yeah. And I mean, I think in that regard too, I think just the evolution of wrestling as a whole, as a, you know, with the exception of the idiotic deathmatch stuff that fills up my Instagram feed from time to time, I think the general public awareness of wrestling and what wrestlers are has changed significantly over the last 30, 40 years. You know, you think back to the Saved by the Bell episode where they're thinking about their future and Slater's like, oh, I'm just going to be a wrestler. And then they fast forward and he's like a spoof of Hulk Hogan, all, you know, fat. But now it's like, no, wrestlers are business people. You know, they're athletes first, they're actors, they're politicians. I think we're in a good time, not only for AEW and WWE, but like you said, with MLW, with TNA, with this new Canadian Maple Leaf promotion that Scott D'Amore is starting up. You know, we're at a time now where it's almost like being back in the 80s with all the territories.
Yeah.
And so, you know, hopefully, we've discussed it before, hopefully with all this influx of promotions, people will understand that it's okay to watch multiple wrestling and you don't have to be a tribalist to one company. My last thing I had, you know, we talked about Cody Rhodes earlier, and I know he has mentioned this recently in interviews, but are you surprised that your boy Matt Cardona has not gotten back into either AEW or WWE? I know he's in Impact right now doing a short term.
No, I'm not. I think that he has really, I know you probably don't listen to the Major Wrestling Figure podcast, but
I do not.
You know, just kind of listening to that, I think that they are, you know, he and Brian Myers, but really Matt Cardona is so much more successful outside of being in the confines of a major company. I mean, they got this toy line launched and they're making all kinds of moves in that regard. And I think now that Vince is gone, maybe some of that wouldn't be as stifled as it was when they were in WWE. But I think eventually, we'll see him. Maybe whether it's a one-off or if he actually comes back. But I think he's enjoying life on the indie scene and proving that you can be an independent wrestler and make money. But you have to work your ass off to make that happen. Whereas, you know, you could sign with WWE or AEW and, you know, spend most of your show days in catering and, you know, playing video games or whatever. But, you know, he's out there every week getting his head split open or whatever. And I'm not into the death match and the blood stuff either, like you, but I think that he's definitely made a difference and put that new coat of paint on him that I think eventually when he does come back, it's going to be huge for whether it's AEW or WWE. I think eventually, because Chelsea Green is in WWE, I think eventually we see him there at some stage in the next few years.
Just no Zack Ryder though.
Zack Ryder's dead, allegedly. But we'll see.
Woo, woo, woo.
Well, on that note, we're going to thank you for being a part of this week's episode, and have a great week. We will see you next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.